This podcast is sponsored by GRU Apron, the meal delivery service for hungry adventurers. GRU Apron delivers everything you need for fresh, healthy meals you can eat on the go or in the dungeon.
There's a variety of delicious food. Check out these recipes. You might get a giant loaf of bread that is literally the only thing you get to eat for a week-long adventure. Or a brown paper sack containing an unspecified lunch of some sort and a tasty side of garlic.
And best of all, you can prepare GRU Apron meals yourself. They contain everything you need. You don't even need light. You can literally make these meals in the dark.
In fact, the monsters, meal makers at GRU Apron prefer that you do. They kind of insist on it.
GRU Apron, they can't wait to have you for dinner.
Thanks to our sponsor. Now, on with the show.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Not a torch or a match in your inventory.
So shall we talk Infocom stuff?
Let's do that.
Excellent. Like that. I have notes, which is good.
Oh, excellent.
go me being all professional. And I think I got some feedback stuff, but not much. And as usual, I saved almost none of it. I also recently declared email bankruptcy again. So if we got email, I probably deleted it.
You do that a lot. I kind of respect it when you do it. When one does it once or something. But if you're doing it like as a constant fallback, maybe you have there's a bigger problem that needs to be addressed.
There is a bigger problem. People send me email and I don't want it. Yeah. I want email for this, but I want it to go to you.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, tell me about some of the email that you do. You managed to not delete.
Looks like I saved two. So Stephanie wrote in to point to a series of Infocom icons made by somebody named Christopher Drum. She said they were released ages ago for Mac OS 9 and then remade for Mac OS 10 and also Windows XP. So we'll have a link for those in the show notes. They're super cool. I don't know if you had a chance to check these out, Kevin. Did you look at the icons yet?
I don't think I got this email, actually. Maybe it ended up in my spam or she only sent it to you. I'm looking at them now for the first time. They look adorable.
They are super neat and they vaguely rang a bell. I think I had these way back in the OS 9 days. Mm-hmm. The current ones, though, while they're for OS 10, they are for like Aqua OS 10. So they're the 128 by 128 pixel size. They're not the Retina ones, which are way larger, but they're still really cool. When I read on Christopher Drum's page about how he made them, he said he actually made them all in Illustrator. And you could, in the full Illustrator models, you can read the text. Like, they're actually huge. So I'm going to send an email off to him to say, hey, have you considered, like, rendering these out actually even larger? So maybe that's something that can get made.
Neat.
But they're cool as is, though. It's super neat.
Yeah.
We'll have a link to the show notes so other people can play along.
It's the box art, like, direct on. And I guess some of them are also in kind of a three-quarter perspective.
Which is that Mac OS 9... you know, isometric kind of view. And anyway, right. they're super, super neat.
Very cool. Now I'm wondering why I didn't get this email. I have a filter that, like, if any email comes to me that has the word Atari in it, it says, this is not spam, go to my inbox. And once in a while, I will get, like, you know, once a year, I will get a piece of legitimate spam where one of the filler words they used was Atari. I'm just like, okay. But I don't have a filter like that for Infocom. Maybe I should.
See, I thought you were going to say that you have a filter that, you know, if email contains Atari, then it's flagged not as spam. And if it doesn't contain Atari, then it is flagged as spam.
Right. Yes.
So I thought that might explain a lot.
I only want email about Atari.
Speaking of Atari, you tweeted about a friend of yours sending you a custom Atari cart.
Thank you for reminding me. My Atari buddy Near Dairy sent me a holiday present, and which I was not expecting at all. And it is a custom Atari 800 cart that has Zork 1, Zork 2, and Zork 3 on it. And you put it in, it gives you a menu, like which game do you want to play, and then you hit a button and you're in it. Now, these games on the Atari were never released on cartridge. They were only released on disc. And I don't know what crazy magic he did, but I have this one-of-a-kind Atari cart for playing the Zork games. So it's amazing.
And it looks like a vintage Atari cart, like it's with the label. I look at this thing, I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. this is amazing.
It's an amazing gift, and I just am so appreciative. And yeah, so when we eventually play Zork 3, that's how I'm going to have to do it.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I saw the tweet, and I thought it was just incredible. What else have I got here? I got one from Bob from the Island. So he says, thanks very much for the Infocom podcast. I'm enjoying it very much to take this walk down memory lane and revisit some of my favorite games from the past. You haven't done my all-time favorite yet, which is The Lurking Horror, but I'm sure you will get to it eventually. Then he wrote some nice stuff about a former podcast of mine. And he says, I also wanted to send you a link to the spells list at IFWiki. And so we'll have that link in the show notes. And he says, since you are playing Sorcerer next, this might be a bit of a spoiler, so maybe don't look until you're on the other side of the spoiler fence. It is a list of all the spells from all the Infocom games that have them, plus some other non-Infocom games too, I think. It's cool to see which spells appear in multiple games and can also be a helpful resource if you are mid-game and can't remember a particular spell.
I might have had that problem a few times in this game. I'm just like, oh yeah, we'll do the thing that makes you whatever fly, and it's like, oh, what's that called? And you have to waste a turn by looking in the book again, and I had that issue.
Yep.
I did not get this email either. Are you sure that people
I think
are...
this one was sent to me.
Okay.
Because this Bob from the Island is somebody who used to write in 10, 15 years ago, I think, when I first started podcasting. So, and he was writing about an old comedy podcast I had back then.
Back in the early days.
Back from the super early days. I've been podcasting for, I think, 11 years, 12 years. I don't know. You'd think I'd be better at it.
You've reached peak Carrington podcast, as good as it's going to get right now.
I reached that very early.
We got an interesting email from Brendan Donahue. He said, Kevin and Carrington, I wanted to pass along that my main partner in crime on a VGA enhancement to the TRS-80 color computer 1 and 2 has recently patched some Infocom games to work in my 64-column text mode, quadrupling the amount of text that could normally be seen on the standard 32-column by 16-row COCO text display, and simultaneously adding lowercase. I understand this may not be a direct interest to you, although, Carrington, you've had some COCO experience, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I love the COCO.
But thought you might be interested. So he sent us a link to the video, which we'll put in the show notes. I don't know that much about the COCO, but in this video, they show the original, I think they were playing Zork. We'll say they're playing Zork. Infocom Zork on the COCO. And it's like 16 columns and on all uppercase text. And just like every description of everything takes like multiple pages of scroll because there's just so little text get on the screen. It looks all blocky and weird, and okay, you know, they did their best with what they could at the time, and that's fine. But then he switches over to the VGA enhanced mode and it looks beautiful, and there's 64 columns and lowercase, and it looks so much more playable. So the magic that they did to upgrade the COCO is pretty incredible. I liked watching that video.
Oh, and for people who don't know old computers like this, the COCO is the TRS-80 color computer, which was a not super expensive computer, home computer from, I think, 1980 to, I guess, 90, 91 would be the COCO 3. But the COCO 1, which is the one that I had way back forever ago, was very limited, very, very limited, between things like lowercase, bah. But still, I liked it. Had a terrible keyboard, but I liked the computer.
Yeah, the 6809 processor is pretty sweet.
Nice. Yeah, it's all about the processor and that, and kind of nothing else. Yeah, yeah. Just leaned heavily on that.
And finally, he said, on a related note, I'm not sure if you're aware, But the second half of the most recent Coco Crew podcast, which is a podcast about the TRS-80 color computer, had an interesting interview with Brian Moriarty, who did the original Z Machine port to the Coco, as well as some new games while working at Infocom. And so he provided us a link to that, which I have not heard yet, but I'm super interested in hearing the interview with Mr. Moriarty. Yep.
And I will make sure that we have a link to the Coco Crew episode in question in our show notes.
Excellent. All right. That's everything I wanted to say about email. Do you want to dig into
that? That's everything I want to say.
All right.
That's more than I want
to
say.
Well, you've deleted all of those emails
I'm
already.
Delete it all now. I'm going to delete that part of the podcast.
So this month, we played Sorcerer, which was the 11th Infocom game. It shipped in March of 1984. It was by Steve Moretzky.
Who I think, from everything I've read, is kind of famous for his comedy. So yes. Kind of an over the top comedy. So supposedly you can kind of tell Moretzky Infocom game because of the nature of the humor in it. And there was lots of funny bits in this, although I wouldn't necessarily call it a complete comedy game, but there were lots of funny bits and lots of over the top funny mm-hmm. bits.
Yeah, there was some good humor, but not slapstick, not like all the time, but it sometimes when you least expected it. Mm-hmm. And usually
kill you.
And usually the funny bits were you were dead.
That's right, how you know. Exactly. And it was funny the way you would die.
Oh, this is getting funny. I'm going to be dead in less than a minute. Sorcerer was the sequel to Enchanter. It was the second in the Enchanter trilogy. There was Enchanter and then Sorcerer and then Spellbreaker, I think. We haven't got there yet, so I don't know. So it's a sequel to Enchanter, and I think certainly continues the world. I don't think one would have needed to play Enchanter to get the full value and enjoyment out of this game.
No, I completely agree, although it does... I mean, it's definitely a sequel. You're playing the same character, like your avatar mm-hmm. is the same one from the earlier game, and you're a little bit more advanced now. You're a more advanced enchanter because you beat, what was his name? Krill, I think,
Krill,
in the first
yeah.
game. So now you are a member of the Circle of Enchanters, and so it really is picking up not too long after the first game. Although I agree, you wouldn't have had to have played that to play this. Although I did find this game fairly easy to get in, and I mean, other than some of the puzzles were difficult, I could really grok the world of the game and the nature of the spells, and I think that was partly because I had played Enchanter, and this game is so much like that.
Absolutely. I mean, you had to... It was easier, a little bit easier, because I already knew how spells worked and how to, whatever, use the spell book and that sort of thing, like stuff like that.
Right, yeah. So I think there is an advantage to having played the first game, but there's no knowledge you need from that wouldn't be supplied either in game or in the box for this.
Right.
Oh, speaking of the box, we should just talk about that.
Yes, let's do that. The box, I think, is one of the more boring or Infocom boxes. The majority of the box is a pendant, a kind of silvery, very large amulet, I guess is the word, hanging on a chain. It's just, I don't know, kind of dull. The text says, "A new evil threatens the kingdom, and the most powerful of all the enchanters has vanished. Sorcerer, second in the Enchanter series." Back of the box says, "Sorcerer, the second of a spellbinding fantasy series in the tradition of Zork, takes you on a magical tour through the darker side of Zorkian enchantment. Your journey begins with a cryptic diary, the last trace of the now-vanished Belbaz the Necromancer, grand and powerful leader of the Guild of Enchanters. It is feared that Belbaz is in thrall to evil sorcery. If so, the very existence of the Circle of Enchanters could be forfeit. To rescue the kingdom and locate your mentor in the treacherous mists of time, you must gain the power and cunning of a true sorcerer." That's what it says.
Well, I hope that happens.
I know.
I hope that I gain that power and that cunning.
do you want to talk about what's in the box?
Well, yeah, the box. I was just thinking about the outside of the box, though, for a second. You're right that the front of it is a big picture of like an amulet that's kind of a mirror, like you'd see yourself in it. Mm-hmm. But without getting all spoilery, doesn't that have like nothing at all to do with the game?
That's, I agree. I mean, there is an amulet in the game, which has very little to do with anything. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, just having the box, just having this big silvery section that has nothing. There's nothing to look at.
No graphics. And because there's cool stuff in this game. There's mazes and there's a demon and there's like, there's stuff. There's many things that could have been very interesting cover art. Mm-hmm. And they've gone with something quite boring that has very little to do with the actual game. Even the thing in the game that it has to do with has little to do with the game. So, yeah. I wonder if I was missing something. Nope. But anyway, inside the box, the big feely is, there's I guess two things. There's the popular Enchanter magazine, and then there's an Infotator. But in the version that I was looking at, although I didn't have an original box for this, the version I was looking at had a reprinted Infotator instead of the original one. I guess the original one was a code wheel, so like a big disc inside a square envelope, and you could rotate the disc, and it's like the front of the envelope is a picture of a room in stone, like a dungeon room that you're looking down on, and around the outside of the walls are a bunch of doors, one of which you can actually open up physically on the envelope that lets you peer through to the code wheel below. Mm-hmm. And then I guess there's another little trap door you can open up. And when you rotate the wheel, it will show a different monster in the door and a description below in the trap door. And the idea is it's a copy protection thing. So at one point in the game, you will be forced to look up something in your Infotator, and so you use the rotating wheel to look up a monster, and then that will give you a code of some sort in the text.
Right.
The version I had instead was the field guide, and again, mine was just a reprint, but mm-hmm. in a PDF, it was a field guide to the creatures of Fraboz, which is, it says, due to last year's bankruptcy of the Fraboz Magic Grommet Company, a severe shortage of Infotators, rotating data wheels, has developed. For the duration of this crisis, we are substituting, at last minute and at great expense, this special birch bark bound edition in book form. And the reality is the code wheel is kind of neat looking, I guess. I don't think I could get a real sense of it from the pictures I've seen. Mm-hmm. But the printed version, the field guide to the creatures of Fraboz, is lovely. It's mm-hmm. it's full color. It's neat looking. I like the text. I actually really like it as a feely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I mean, I was only using a PDF online that I found of that, but it would look like a nice little book, and it contains basically the same information, which was some information about various creatures of the land, and then also some color coding information that you'll need at one point to really start the game. So yeah, that was one of the two things, and I wanted to mention what the Digital Antiquarian article said about it. It said the crown jewel was contained inside the box in the form of the Infotator, an elaborately illustrated code wheel that was both one of Infocom's most blatant of a feely as an unabashed copy protection, and so cool it didn't really matter. The Infotator is today among the rare pieces of Infocom ephemera. It remained in production for just a few months before Infocom switched to a standardized box format that was too small to accommodate it and was then forced to replace it with the less interesting table of information on plain paper. So there was that. And there's also the popular Enchanting magazine, which I think was clever. Mm-hmm. Has some articles, basically background information about what's going on in the game. There's an article, the cover article is about the missing necromancer guy that you need to hunt for during the game. And some clues and things, and kind of clever.
Yep, and there's, again, I won't get spoilery, but there's a section in it that has personal ads and classifieds. And in one of the classified ads, there's an ad for a lost item, and it's an item you can find in the game. So I liked that. That was kind of neat, like a callback to the magazine.
I don't think
and it was funny. That. Like, the magazine had a lot of funny stuff. Oh, you didn't notice that?
Yeah, I did not.
Well, when we're on the other side of the fence, we can talk about it.
Excellent. And then you put, I noticed, in the links that you found, something I had not found before, which is a way to print out your own replica Infotator.
Yeah, and that was the one that I was using while I played. Mm. And then I found the printed PDF that is the colorful one, and it was more fun. I actually liked the printed magazine style one better than the replicating rotating wheel. Hmm. You only have to use it once in the game, though. So it's like a use once, and unless you restore, as I did a couple times.
Sure.
Ideally, you only have to use it once.
Had you ever played this game before?
I had not.
Me neither. It was my first time through. We didn't talk about difficulty rating and stuff. It was in the fantasy realm. That's the word. Category. And I don't know. I don't know what they listed it for difficulty. Probably standard. I would
say standard because it wasn't that difficult.
No, I barely.
Maybe I'm getting good at these, but
I don't know. It's one of those things. I barely had to peek a tiny bit at the Invisiclues, and I felt stupid about them both times when I did. So. Yeah, I didn't think it was that hard. In fact, it was mostly fair, which is it's good.
Yep. You know. There was some things I thought very unfair, but mostly very fair.
Yeah. Yes, there was
a couple things that were annoying. It is possible to lose this game very early and not know it until very late. And that's annoying.
I don't like
he
that.
He said,
yes.
With experience. I think this was also released. Wasn't there a box set of the Enchanter series? They gathered together the three gray box versions, I think, into a collection.
Yes, I believe so. They did a lot of that sort of collecting later on, Lost Treasures and the Enchanter collection and things like that. Yes. So that's always cool. They released, you know, several formats too. I mean, all this stuff was eventually first on floppy and then later on CD-ROM and, you know, later on. And in 20 years, I'm sure they'll be released on hollow disk or something.
I look forward to that. So the idea of this game, like you talked about, is your mentor, like, or the head of the Circle of Enchanters or whatever, this Belboz person is missing. And your goal is to basically find him. And so it's very similar to Enchanter in that you're going to work your way through a fairly large open world. You're going to use spells to solve puzzles. Like that's your main puzzle solving thing is it's a few items you find, but it's mostly finding spells and then using them in ways to get to areas or past areas or whatever, like basically solve the puzzles with spells and finally go up against the big bad and have a big bad battle. But unlike Enchanter, I found the battle pretty disappointing in this. There basically is just, oh, you're here and you either easily and instantly win or you don't win.
Yeah, the big, like, oh. You're right. The big boss battle at the end, it was like, nothing. It was...
Yeah, if you come prepared, you instantly win.
Right.
If you don't come perfectly prepared, you just automatically lose.
But in Enchanter...
different than Enchanter.
Yes, in Enchanter, you had to come prepared, but you had to die 10 times to know what to bring.
And you do a bunch of steps. Like, I had to go through it a bunch of times to learn, okay, I got to do this, then I got to do this, then I got to cast this spell, then I wait, then I cast that sort of thing. But here it's not. Here it's just be prepared and open a door.
Right, and how to be prepared was perfectly obvious. You go to the room, you do what you have to do. And
it was perfectly obvious the second time.
Sure.
I did show up unprepared the first time and was kicking myself. I'm like, oh, of course. But yeah, it is pretty obvious. And probably very obvious to other people. And that's it. And you just basically win. So it's more about the puzzles en route. And there's a couple of really great ones.
Yes.
But there isn't really much going on here plot-wise. I mean, which I is a thing we've talked about a few times in these games. Like, they're not really... These aren't novels. So there's a threadbare plot kind of holding this together. And it's more that you're going to make your way through a maze, solve a bunch of puzzles, and then it will come to an end. It's very much, I think, from what I've read, it is the middle child of... It's not just the middle game. It's sort of like not as well regarded as the first and the third game in the series, it seems. That is just kind of in between it, and its goal is simply to get you out of the first game and into the third game and have some puzzles in the middle.
Yeah, I read that too. We're probably talking about the same article, but I don't know. I felt that was a little harsh. I really enjoyed this game. I enjoyed a lot about it. There's a couple things that were unfair, but I had fun, and I thought it was a excellent follow-up and compliment to Enchanter, and Great. If the next one is so much better, maybe in the future I'm going to go, oh yeah, this really is the worst of the three. But it's not bad at all.
Yeah, and I wasn't disappointed by it. And I found it funny. People seem to be not liking the type of humor in it, but it tickles my funny bone. Like, I thought the funny bits were quite funny. I liked the puzzles. There's one puzzle in particular near the end that I thought was spectacular, that I absolutely adored. It wasn't super difficult, but it was incredibly rewarding, and I just adored it, and I hadn't done anything like it in an Infocom game, so I loved that. I liked the use of the spell. In the same way that Enchanter, like, I really enjoy the spell casting in these games. Like, it's really fun to have those at your disposal and to figure out how to use them to solve puzzles in creative ways, and I really like it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I think I did like Enchanter more, but I did really like this game.
I think I agree with you. Yeah. It is...
Oh, it also... you don't have to eat. Holy cow. That's the thing I've always complained about. This whole, oh, you're going to get thirsty, you're going to get hungry. And they basically get rid of that whole ticking clock with a potion that that you get early that's, you know, obviate need for food and drink. But you still have to sleep. So yay for not needing to eat or drink, boo for still having to sleep. And the worst is in Enchanter, when you would have to sleep, which wasn't that often, it would be like a chapter marker kind of. You would do a section, mm-hmm. complete it, mm-hmm. you'd have to sleep. In your dreams, you would get upgraded essentially to another level of magician, mm-hmm. and it would mark going into the next section of the game. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed the sleeping. It was cool. It was useful. It was well done. Here, sleeping is completely useless,
yep.
and it just forces you to do it a whole bunch. And for the most part, if you sleep in certain bad areas, you will immediately die mm-hmm. with no way to get out of it. But 99% of the time, you can just sleep wherever you want, and right. it does nothing.
I didn't find it that troubling.
Tedious.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I don't.
It's tedious.
It was a little tedious, and you had to find a safe spot to sleep, and there were a few unsafe spots. I liked an Enchanter that the dreams gave you clues. Mm-hmm. And in this game, it didn't. The dreams were, they did. I mean, there were some different dreams, but they don't mean anything.
It's not that I could tell. And I was writing down notes from the dreams, mm-hmm. but I think they do nothing.
Some of them are the exact same dreams from the previous game. So I don't know. But the need, they got rid of the need to eat and drink via, and this is not.
I don't think it's a spoiler because it's early and you get a potion that specifically just does that.
Right. At the beginning of the game, early on, you're hungry and thirsty, but you find a potion, you drink the potion, and then you're not hungry and thirsty. And that really, for the most part, makes it so you don't have to eat or drink during the game, which I appreciate. However, I had one game where I was exploring, looking around, learning so long that I started getting hungry again. So it's not really forever. It was for a few hundred moves. So there is a timer on this game, and if you go too long, you will starve to death because there's nothing.
I did not know that.
There's nothing to eat in this game.
Yeah, because I don't think I hit 200 moves in my longest game. I think rough, maybe almost that.
Right.
But I don't think I ever passed the 200 moves. I definitely went over 100 moves in every game I played, but I don't think I ever hit 200.
Oh, I think the one I finished ended up being 607 moves when I finally finished.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hold on. Oh, you know what? 606.
Wow, really?
I just scrolled down. My score, 400 of a possible 400, and 606 moves.
I got 400. Puts you 400, in the... 607. You're just a little bit better than me.
Yeah, my class was Leader of the Circle of Enchanters. Mm-hmm. Now, that was my final game. I have many deaths before that I get lower scores.
So many.
Many, many deaths. So, but I like that they found an in-game way to sensibly and thematically appropriate way to get rid of the silly ticking clock of needing to eat and drink for most of the game. So I dug that. They also found an in-game way to save your game, which is so cool. There's like basically a spell that is essentially a way to save your game. It's a restore if you die spell. And that's super cool.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think in the previous game, you could die two or three times. I don't remember. And the circle of enchanters would send you back, you know.
And then finally they'd be like, you know what? No,
this guy's no good. And this one, you could just keep dying over and over again. And most of the time, there was really no harm to it. You got all your stuff back. You know, you were put in a safe spot. Later on in the game, actually, that stops happening because you mm-hmm. it's you know, but there's always, of course, save and restore for those situations.
Yep, and I like that there was a clue. I died early enough that I died before having the spell that lets you restore yourself, because I die a lot and frequently. And when you die not having used the spell to essentially save your in-game life, after you die, it says something like, unfortunately, you didn't make provisions for your untimely death. Right. I was like, oh, so there's like a clue in the message that you get when you die telling you there is a way to make provisions for an untimely death.
Yes.
And I really like that. Like, that's a smart way so that saving your game is an in-game thing. It's not completely separate as a metagame thing. And I really like that. That was really smart.
That was clever. Yeah, I agree. I want to point out that in terms of size, this game is almost exactly perfectly average.
Okay.
This there was 84 rooms in Sorcerer. 81 is average for an Infocom game. Vocabulary of 1,013 words, whereas 976 is average. And there's 36 objects in this game, which seems low to me, but 36 is the average object count for an Infocom game. So...
I can see the 36, though, because you use spells so much.
Yeah.
And while you get a few of those from scrolls, you get a couple that you start with, and you're using those maybe more than objects, I guess.
Yeah.
The map felt like a good size to me. It certainly didn't feel small enough to be cramped, but it didn't seem overwhelmingly large, and I could keep it in my head because for the most part, you're going kind of in areas. Like at any given time, you're going to be working in a section of the map. Although I should point out that the map, like a lot of Infocom game maps, it seems, is kind of divided into two sections, like a small intro section. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's this guild area you start in that maybe has 10 locations or something. And it's like a starter area where you walk around that at the beginning of the game and you do stuff and you collect things. You kind of learn the world and gather some goodies and get ready for your adventure.
Yeah.
And then you venture forth into the bigger open world map. And in this case, you can't go back to the guild thing. So you better make sure you've done
got
what you need to do or too bad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Infocom games seem to be kind of set up that way, where there's a small section at the beginning and then you go into a bigger world. And that's definitely what happens here.
Yeah. It keeps it from feeling overwhelming at the beginning, I think, perhaps. Speaking of maps, normally I playing these games, I will often pull up the map online to help me navigate. And I don't really consider that cheating at all. It just helps me a little bit. And for this game, I didn't. Until I was done with the game, I never looked at the PDF map. I was able to map it myself, including the mazes and everything. So,
but the mazes, they're normally, like, I think if anybody listens to our back catalog of this episode, you'll know, oh, mazes, Carrington hates mazes. Mm-hmm. I've got a thing against mazes. This is the first Infocom game maze that I didn't hate, that I actually liked. It was neat. And I was like, oh my goodness, I enjoyed this maze.
Here's what I wrote in my notepad right here. I wrote two mazes. I didn't hate them. And this is the first time.
Which is a major benefit, because I'm like, how often does that happen? I guess there are two mazes. I wasn't thinking, there's also the coal area, I guess, is a maze in a sense.
Yeah.
But there is this glass maze, which is kind of like, in my mind, it was like going into a physical Rubik's Cube, because it's 3D. Like, it's kind of a cube of rooms that you navigate through, and it's made of glass, and it's really cool. And I would have thought I would hate it, and I didn't hate it. It was neat, and I actually quite liked it.
Mm-hmm. So. Me too. I really sort of enjoyed them. I enjoyed even mapping them. I thought that they were just expertly designed. The main maze, the glass maze, was not thrown together. They thought about this thing hard.
Mm-hmm.
When I first mapped the whole thing, I had a spell that allows you to fly a little bit. And I was able, through death and death and death and just restarting, to map the entire maze with my little bit of flight. And when I finally was going to get into the last room of the maze, I couldn't, because I couldn't fly that far. And later on, I was able to do it through other means. But they really thought about people like me who were just going to bash their head against the wall until they did it. And but I was unable to really complete the maze because of the way they plan. And then on the way back through the maze, there's this other thing where I died because I stopped flying at the exact opportune wrong time. Mm-hmm. They had to have planned it out.
They totally planned it. And it got me to the first time. Well, the first time I had completed the maze and was working back my way back through. And I want to talk about that on the other end of the spoiler fence, because neat thing happens in the maze. And just, I really like the maze. Like, and I can't believe I'm even saying that. But it's a testament to like how good some of the puzzles are in here and how fun they are, that they spent that much time on a maze and they actually came up with mazes that I enjoyed going through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Can't believe I said that.
Let's see. What else? The word that I only learned one word this game, and that word was troglodyte.
You didn't know troglodyte. I think I've encountered those before through Dungeons & Dragons type stuff.
Well, I never played a lot of Dungeons & Dragons. I sort of had a sense of what it meant. Like, it's like a low person or something, some low class something, but literally it means cave dweller. So that's what I learned. Now you've learned it too.
Now I have learned it too. I think there was a band called Troglodyte as well.
Really?
Like a metal band? Huh. Yeah.
Was it Canadian?
But I'm pretty sure I know troglodytes from
sure
D&D.
It seems like a D&D nerd sort of word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What else can we talk about before hitting the old fancy spoiler?
I do have a note saying that after you've played this game for a few hours, you find yourself typing commands like Gnusto Swanzo, and it seems totally normal. That's one of the weird things about the spell-based games, is you sometimes are typing complete nonsense phrases, but they make sense to you because you learn these spells as you type things. So lots of English sentences, and also lots of like bizarre combinations of words that just seem like these are your new words you have.
Yes, I have a similar note. That's very true. Very true. So we both finished it, and apparently you were one move faster than me, but
which is hilarious.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I really had to optimize, though. I mean, I played a few versions of the game, and then I was just like, now I know how to do things. I'm going to like play a optimized version where I...
Oh, yeah, my final game, well, that is my optimized version.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hugely so. Like, I know I went way longer than that. Also, I also did the thing I normally do where I'm keeping tons of save games and I'll try a thing. And then once I kind of solve an area, then I do it with very few moves. And then that's the version of the game I move forward from. Right. So in that sense, I cheat tremendously. Mm-hmm. Like, I never just stumble through a game. I'm constantly refining the moves in a section.
Right.
Because I'm a big old cheater. Oh, and we didn't talk about how this game adds potions.
Potions.
From my memory, there were no potions in Enchanter.
Right.
So they're basically like a one-use spell. So it's kind of the same thing. It's just another spell. Mm-hmm. But it's like a spell you can't put in your spell book, although there are also spells you can't put in your spell book. So I'm not really sure why you have potions, but you have potions. So you also can have those.
Right. Yes, you can. And which cannot always be combined. It's usually one potion at a time. And some of the humor in this game is if you combine potions, bad things will happen to you.
Humorous death effect.
Yes. And different combinations of potions provide different deaths, and they're all funny.
And there's also, though, there are combinations of spells. Like, it is combining magic is a part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yeah, so anyway.
So I dug it, though. I liked it. And I'm surprised that in general, people who are fans of Infocom and who write about Infocom games, generally, if they talk about this game and they review it, it always has like a negative aspect to the review where people say, oh, I don't find the humors as funny, or I don't like the plot as much, or it's not as good as the other games in the series. Like, there's always this like kind of that people say, oh, the puzzles are really good, but it's always these backhanded parts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think the game is better than that. It's not my favorite Infocom game we've played, but I'm in all ways, I had a very positive experience. I liked it. I loved some of the puzzles. I liked this enchanter world. Mm-hmm. I liked the spell casting. I liked the humor. I'm really glad that I played this game. Like, I would strongly recommend it to people.
Absolutely. I have no qualms about this game. And if this is the worst of the three, then great, because I'm super looking forward to...
Because then the third one's going to be amazing.
One. Right.
Because that's two for two I've really liked.
Yeah. 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 Sorcerer.
Sorcerer. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't cross the spoiler fence, though. I mean, because I do want to cross the spoiler fence, but mm-hmm. we should talk about our next game we're going to play. And I think in the first time in Eaten by a Gru history, we aren't picking it at this moment. Like, you've already picked the game, and we started this podcast already knowing the next game.
Yes.
That's crazy.
I know, it's crazy. People have accused us of planning things ahead of time, which we don't, except for this time, which I did, because it required roping in another person, and I want to make sure she was available and so on. So the next game we will play via my edict is Plundered Hearts, which is Infocom's, I think, some sort of romance pirate game. It was a game written by a woman for women, so we are, in addition to you and I playing and reviewing this game, we are going to have Quinn Dunkey joining us, because she is a woman and will be able to provide the female perspective on this game.
And also perspective of somebody who's better at most things than us.
Yes, but apparently not these games. She was just, the first thing she said to me was just like, oh, these games, they're hard, I don't know. So,
but they are hard.
They are hard.
So, yes.
So... I told her it's fine to cheat, because that's what we do.
It is what we do. Heck yes.
Yeah. So, Plundered Hearts will be the next game. And then...
And we will have a guest on the show. That's very exciting.
Yes. It will be good. So, you're ready to move on to the fence?
Oh, I'm ready to leap the fence and talk spoilers.
Okay. Then let's give the spoiler fence caveat. Go.
We're going to wreck the game. The fence has a big sign on it that says games are wrecked past here. Mm-hmm. Honestly, folks, like if you haven't played this game and you want to, stop listening now, because on the other side of the spoiler fence, we are going to specifically talk about puzzles. We are going to ruin the game. Yep. We're going to ruin the ending. Yep. We're going to give you solutions, and it's not going to be as fun. And this is a game you totally could complete without cheating too much.
Right. I did.
Only a little bit of cheating.
Yeah, did you, before we get there, did you cheat? Did you have
to? I cheated not at all. Not a one. Didn't look at anything. Well, so that's why it took me a little longer.
And it took me, I mean, I'm not as smart as Carrington, but I had to just like peek a little bit out of the corner.
I was really tempted a couple times, and then instead what I did was I just like went away. I just, you know what, I'm going to just let it sit in the back of my mind for a couple of days, and then I'd have another idea and I'd come back to it. And it's really rewarding to do that.
I hate that works, but that totally works.
It certainly worked for this game in particular. So I think this is the second one where I've been able to finish. I mean, I died a ton. I tried tons of things that didn't work, and I beat my head against a couple of puzzles. But I was actually able to solve it without looking at a single clue, not a walkthrough. I didn't look at the map. I didn't look at the Invisi clues, nothing. So I was actually able to solve it. But it did take it took basically a whole month. It took me a month to play this game. Because I started playing right after we recorded the last one, mm-hmm. and I finished like 3 hours ago.
Wow. Yeah, it took me almost the whole time, too. I started right after we recorded the last one, and then I finished, 4 days ago or something. So it took me 26 days or something of thinking about it and not thinking about it. So
I went, the only time I was up at my family's house for the Christmas break, I was up there, I was playing before Christmas dinner, I was playing after Christmas dinner, I was playing like crazy. Oh, one thing we didn't talk about is, where I didn't play was in Belize. Did I tell you I went to Belize?
No, tell me.
I went to Belize, it was amazing.
Nice.
Which kind of has nothing to do with Infocom, but I want to share it. It was fantastic. So Rachel and I went down to Belize, but not on the beach. We were this thing called the Blankano Lodge, which is like 2 hours or 2.5 hours into the jungle. You land and then you drive into the jungle. And it was amazing. And we went to Mayan ruins, and we went to this thing called the ATM cave, where you got to hike through the jungle and then and wear a hard hat and a headlamp and a PFD and swim into a cave.
I'm pretty sure you're confusing real life with some sort of Infocom adventure.
Totally. I felt like Lara Croft. It was amazing. Like, I am a weird looking Lara Croft. It was crazy. We went horseback riding in through the rainforest, and it just an amazing trip where every day was crazy adventures. So
that's,
it was awesome.
That's great.
So I didn't play there, yeah. But other than like the 5 days I spent in the jungle of Belize, yeah. I was playing almost every day, other than when I was just so stuck, I couldn't think of anything and I would just let it sit for a day or two.
Sure.
But it really did take me like a month to finish this game.
How did you said you were playing at the cabin or whatever. Were you playing on?
No,
on
I didn't. I didn't play it in Belize. So I right. played it like other than.
Oh, you
I
said something about the other thing with your family or something.
At home. I played it using Zoom on the Mac.
Okay, that was my question. That was going to be my question. I played.
So
it
just a Z file with Zoom, and worked great. No errors. No crashing. No anything. Like this one just worked seamlessly.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I had no weirdness. It was very good. Okay, this is the Spoiler Friends for realsies. Here we go.
For realsies.
My big Spoiler Friends comment is this. It really bugged me that this game had a puzzle that was unsolvable. The minefield. There's this area.
Oh, yeah, it's not a puzzle. It's basically a red herring. It's a minefield that you can't, as far as I can tell, you can't get across because I couldn't get across. I finally gave up, and you don't need to.
Exactly. See, to me, it's fair in this game to have a red herring in the form of an object that doesn't further the game, that doesn't help you. Something like, I don't know, a floor
like
waxer.
The log flume. Like, there's parts of the...
Right.
When you go to that, what's it called? The
fair,
Disneyland type place you go to.
The carnival, whatever it is.
Bunch of stuff there that really is totally meaningless. Like, go into haunted house means nothing. Go on the log flume means nothing.
Exactly. Or there's a floor waxer that you could walk around. You could wax all the floors.
Yes, there is indeed. So, you can get a floor waxer, which is so random and weird.
So to me, that sort of thing is random and weird and fair. To have what looks like a puzzle to be solved that is unsolvable is not fair.
And I finally just gave up on it and figured, well, I'll come back after I do other things. And then the game was suddenly over and I was like, oh, okay, that's a thing that's just undone.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So they could have just left that out. The game would not have been any worse for it.
And I did look, I finished the game, so I don't consider it cheating. Afterwards I was done. I looked up a bunch of things. I wanted to look up, what do you actually get? And from there you get nothing.
Right.
It's just... here for, I don't know if it was supposed to be a puzzle and then just got left unfinished or something for space, or it seems silly. Another thing I didn't like was at the very beginning, it's a neat opening sequence where you're dreaming at the beginning. You just don't know it at first. And that's kind of a neat false open. I like that. But it's weird that you wake up in the dark in your bed. And so I was like, okay, I want to frotz something, but what do I have that I can frotz that can... And in the end, I decided rather than like frotzing the bed and frotzing various things, I frotzed myself, like made myself my light source, which I was terrified to do because if you did that in Enchanter, it's great right up until like the very last move of the game, in which case you're going to die because you get eaten by a Gru,
right.
Because you can't get rid of your light source or vice versa. So I was like, what the heck? So I ended up frotzing myself, figuring, okay, I'm going to... I make myself my light source, and then I'll play a bit of the game, then I'll go back and start again and make a different thing my light source. And then I kind of forgot to do that. And about halfway through the game, I realized, oh my gosh, I'm my light source. This is going to make it unwinnable at the end. So I restarted my game completely, and it turns out I had no need to. You can completely make yourself your light source in this, and there's no downside.
I had exactly the same experience. Exactly the same thing. And at one point I looked at myself, like, I wonder what it says. And it says, like, you know, whatever it says, you're as ugly as ever. And
yes, and you're glowing or whatever.
And
what have I done?
You were frotz. And I was like, oh no, I'm just like, this is going to be bad. So I just abandoned the game and reran the whole thing. Exactly what you said, because I've been bitten before by this.
Exactly. I was like, no. Especially I've been bitten before by the... I avoided it in the first game because I knew, don't do that. But especially in the second game of a series that basically the first game intentionally does that. If you make yourself your light source, too bad for you. That's a trap laid for you. Quite annoying that it would have been perfectly fine to do that. And I felt that there should be something that would kill you if you fought yourself. It's wrong that there isn't. It's also kind of super crappy that you can make the game unwinnable at the beginning. Like, you got to get the orange potion, the Viltstew or whatever, basically the orange potion through the mail. It's obvious you need to do that because you find the matchbook, and if you read it, it says, hey, put this matchbook in a mailbox, right. and if you do before noon, then we'll ship it like the day before, so right. you'll get it, which I really liked. I'm like, okay, good. But the one time, the first time I got that, and I was like, oh, okay, no worries. Uh-huh. But this, in replaying later, I ended up making the game unwinnable because I took my time walking around. Then, how did this work? Okay, so I took my time walking around in the guild hall, having already solved it. Like, I knew what I needed to do. And so I was just kind of doing another game look around to make sure that there wasn't something I was missing, because I had realized from having moved on a bit that you can't go back to the guild hall after you leave it. So mm-hmm. I want to make sure I've done everything I need to do. Sure. And I spent too much time, so I missed the messenger person. I didn't put the matchbox in before they showed up, so they're not going to come back until the next day.
Right.
But you get super tired and you need to sleep. So I'm like, just basically done everything. I've put the matchbox in the mailbox and now I'm just going to wait till the next day, because I got to wait for the messenger to come because I've missed the delivery. Mm-hmm. But if you wait that long, it makes you super tired and you have to sleep. But if you sleep in the guild hall, you lose the game. You immediately get caught by the weird demon guy and you die.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wait too long at the beginning, you can make the game unplayable if you miss the messenger.
Interesting. Yeah. See, here's the problem I had with that same thing. You have this matchbook. You're supposed to put it into a mailbox. And then there was they called it like a delivery receptacle. I wasn't sure that was the mailbox that I was supposed to use. Or I would come into a real mailbox, like a West of House sort of mailbox with a little flag on it later on in the game.
I had the same thing, but I solved the puzzle.
Mm.
What I did was, I wasn't sure as well, so I said, put matchbox in mailbox. Mm-hmm. And it did it. So I'm like, okay, that's therefore the mailbox.
Yeah. There's some just funny ways to die. If your first move in this game, if you type wake me or wake myself or something, then you wake up and you spend the day going shopping with another person, and you have a lovely day out. When you come back, everyone in the guild hall is dead.
Because you end up going, which is so funny, because when you do play the normal game, you get that note saying, I tried to wake you, but I couldn't.
Right.
So the rest of us have all gone shopping for the guild picnic or whatever coming up. But if you wake yourself in time, then you get to go shopping for the guild picnic, and then, well, everything goes horrible. You've missed your chance to be the hero, which is so funny.
Yes. So good. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, you receive, you know, negative 100 points in zero moves. It's just like, you completely avoid the game.
Because I did that too, and I think it's really fun, because you, once you play the game a bit, you know, okay, I'm trying to wake myself because I know I'm going to get attacked by this thingy, and I'm trying to wake up, and it's just so good.
Yeah, so good.
So I like that very much. The amusement park.
Yes.
Let's talk about the map a bit. So we talked about how the map has like a little area, which is the guild hall, and then the larger world. The amusement park is kind of nonsensical. Like, why is there even an amusement park here? And it's an amusement park. You go down a crater, then through the crater, there's an amusement park beside like the area that you have to go to with the demon. And I get that we got to go in the amusement park because I got to get that one, which was of the two spells you need at the very end. One of them, I think, is from the amusement park.
Right.
I can't remember which one. Anyway, you got to go in there to get one of the scrolls. But it's silly that there's an amusement park. And the vast majority of it is red herring. Like, there's a log flume you can ride, and there's a haunted house, and you can go in and death. Did you use the slot machine?
I did, and I did not. So you need, in this game, you need two Zorkmids to get into different areas. Zorkmid being...
I have an embarrassing tale about the second Zorkmid.
So there's two, apparently, I've learned, there's two ways to do it. Two ways to do this. There's two gnomes that you have to pay, one Zorkmid each.
Right.
I think the preferred way to do it is you give a gnome the Zorkmid, he thanks you, he lets you in, he goes to sleep, and then you search him, you take the Zorkmid back, you steal it from him, and then you go pay the other gnome to get into the...
With that same Zorkmid. And I like how you pluck the Zorkmid from like a tree.
Yes.
Because money does grow on trees. Trees.
That's not how I did it. The way I did it, and it sounds like you did it, is...
No, then I'm extra embarrassed.
Oh, no. The you pay, go to the other guy first. You pay your Zorkmid to get into the
guy.
The,
you wake the guy up, you pay him, he goes back to sleep.
Yes. No, not that. I paid the gnome who lets you into the fair first. Get into the fair, do what you have to do there, play the slot machine, which apparently there's every time you play the slot machine, there's a 1 in 64 chance that you win a Zorkmid, which I did, and I lucked into that, and then I used that Zorkmid to get into the other area. So I didn't steal from anybody, I just used the slot machine.
So that's such a bad person.
But apparently, there's also a 1 in 64 chance that you will win the jackpot on the slot machine and I guess get buried in coins and die.
That was my, I've written down that, that is my sixth death. It says, like, I got the slot machine jackpot in the casino. It says, ping, a pot of gold appears in the first section of the display. Ping, a pot of gold appears in the second section of the display. Ping, a pot of gold appears in the third section of the display. Ping, 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 ping. An unbelievable torrent of Zorkmid coins pours out of the machine, far more than the machine could possibly contain. You are buried and crushed under a huge mass of coins. You have died. So, and your score is 205 at a possible 400. This puts you in the class of senior enchanter. So I died by death by Zorkmids. So I never went back to it. I was walking around for the longest time. I got the coin from the sleeping person. Uh-huh. You wake him up. He says, I need a Zorkmid. By this point, you've plucked it from the tree. So I give him the Zorkmid. He goes back to sleep. Yeah. And then for the longest time, I went to the, you know, you try to walk into the amusement park area and you hit the invisible wall and the other gnome appears and says, you got to pay a Zorkmid. But I don't have a Zorkmid. I've given it to the other gnome. Yeah. And for ages, I couldn't. I'm like, where do I get another Zorkmid? I'm walking around. I figured there must be, go back to where the tree was, but the tree like disappears after you pluck the one. I've been going crazy. And then finally, I said, well, maybe I can like search the first gnome. And if you search the gnome, it says, oh, you find a Zorkmid from a sleeping body and just take it. Like it just kind of steals it for you. I'm like, oh, I've stolen the Zorkmid. Is that a bad thing? And then I used the second Zorkmid, but I felt really guilty about stealing it. I thought there must be another way, but I couldn't think of another way. Cause when I went to the slot machine, I thought, well, maybe I can't use the slot machine cause I don't have a Zorkmid. I just pulled the handle and it just works without one.
Right.
And then when I won, it killed me. So I thought, well, I can't get one from there. So I actually just played the game and the way I got through was stealing back the Zorkmid. And I felt guilty even at the end of the game. Like, oh, I'm a bad adventurer. I'm a thief.
Yeah, it doesn't. It may be a little out of character for this character to who's supposed to be a good guy, and I mean, literally, there's a code of ethics at the beginning of the game that you can read in the guild hall. That, you know, it's like be nice and don't cheat and blah blah blah. So it does seem a little out of character for him to be stealing money from a sleeping guy.
Yep, I read the tenets, and I it seemed out of character for me too. I really didn't want to steal it, and I didn't even steal it. I even felt guilty at first, but I'm like, all I did was search. Technically, the game stole it on its own. Like, so I felt bad about it, but I did it anyway. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
Boo 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 boo.
Okay,
what else have I got here? They got funny deaths, you know, like the Dorn, we should talk about the bat maze, the glass maze. Mm-hmm. I have much to say about the glass maze.
Sure.
I really like that maze. The fact that it's a 3D maze, the fact that you become a bat, the fact that it killed me because I become the bat, I finally make my way through, you know, staying in bat form, mm-hmm. and then coming back, the fact that you need to have memorized the turn yourself into a bat spell 3 times mm-hmm. because you'll need to re-bat yourself halfway through coming back. Even that wasn't enough to make me not like this maze. I died. I kind of laughed at it. I like the fact that when you finally get through the maze and you've negotiated, you've mapped it all in your bat sonar sense, you get to the essentially, which is like a chimney in the middle mm-hmm. and you chuck down the scroll to mm-hmm. to get out of the maze. Because you can't carry anything because you're going to be a bat.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're standing there and then you hear the maze reconfigure itself and you know it's going to be different going back. I'm like, you know what? Bring it. This maze is awesome. And the fact that I can be halfway through and the maze reconfigures itself, but at least it tells me it's doing mm-hmm. so. The maze was a fair maze. It was a great maze. I liked doing the maze as a bat. And then there's that Dorn beast that chases you.
Yeah.
And I wrote down what it says. The Dornbeast rushes after you. Its ear-splitting bellowing resounds through the glass maze. Suddenly, the Dornbeast realizes that it is galloping through midair and gives a surprisingly high-pitched squeal. It claws frantically at thin air, trying desperately to invent Dornbeast flight. You happily notice that Dornbeast do not so much fly as plummet. And then later, when you do a couple more moves, you enter the area where there's like just a splash on the ground of Dornbeast. Like,
yeah.
It's such a funny maze.
I tried eating it. I tried taking it. You should leave the Dornbeast alone when it's dead. Let me tell you that.
I didn't even know it was a thing you could. I did just leave it alone.
Such a good maze, though.
It was a good maze.
And it's just, like I said before, expertly made. When I mapped it going in, I didn't have bat flight. I only had bird flight. So it was. It took a long time. It took a while, a lot of deaths to map. But on the way back, after it reconfigured, I had bat flight, and I didn't find it tedious to remap the maze because having the bat sonar, it gave you enough information where I didn't have to kill myself 1,000 times to die. It was just...
And the fact that it was a 3D maze and yet perfectly mappable, like without me looking at a map, I was able to map it. And I'm not great at mapping mazes.
No.
So it's a totally fair maze and actually fun to go through.
Yes.
And a neat little puzzle, and I really dug it.
And they timed it well. I mean, just flying back as a bat, there's one point, and I assume they planned it this way. The point which the bat spell runs out and you turn back into a human, for me, happened to be a point where there was no floor, so I just splatted down. So I had to like add an extra wait command in there so that I didn't turn into a human at the wrong time.
I did the exact same thing and turn into at a place where there's going to be a floor.
Right.
Like they clearly, I mean, it's so well done that way that it always is going to be, no, you're going to run out over the, well, it's so good. So
yeah,
good.
Yeah. And there's one other thing. When I saw that there was a maze, I almost threw up my arms and just like I basically given myself permission not to deal with mazes. You know, it's not something I enjoy. I'm not going to do it. I almost like was going to Google how to get through this maze. And then I had a little inspiration and I restarted the game saved and restarted. And I went to the encyclopedia at the beginning. In the Guild Hall.
Oh, yeah, there is the encyclopedia there.
You can look stuff up in the encyclopedia that your guy at that point could not possibly know about, but it's in the encyclopedia. So I looked up the maze, and it said it was a glass maze made in this year with 27 rooms. And just knowing that, I was just like, oh.
It's going to be like a 9x9 thing.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. And I knew it was square, and it's probably going to be like exactly like a Rubik's Cube. It's like, I can do this, you know, so... that's why I mapped the maze because so then I went back and I started looking up everything in the encyclopedia and you can look up, you know, Infocom.
I didn't realize that. I never looked up anything.
It's actually pretty, and the InvisiClues actually has a list of everything you can look up in the encyclopedia, including some just ridiculous stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. I want to talk about the time travel puzzle.
Which is my favorite puzzle, I think, so far in Infocom. I love the time travel puzzle. I didn't really call it a time travel puzzle, but like the you and your older version of yourself, you or whatever, younger, so good,
it's
so
like
good.
It's like a time loop thing where you go into a room and there is an older version of you that gives you a combination to a door that you haven't seen before and then asks you for your own spell book.
Because it's you leaving the maze.
Yeah.
It's so good. And then when you leave the maze, you have to do the same thing. You have to give yourself the code you now know.
Yes. And if you don't do it right, it says like you without fanfare, you blip out of existence and the game is over.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good, though. When I first saw that it was like you cast that spell and then a version of you, or was it you drank a potion, whichever, and then the version of you comes alive, essentially, like comes out of the coal room. I thought it was going to be like Prince of Persia. Like I'm going to have to fight a negative version of myself or something. Mm-hmm. Or when I move, it would move the opposite way and be like a drop myself through a hole puzzle.
Yeah.
But this was so much better. The fact that you were just seeing yourself in the future coming out of the maze, give yourself a code, wait to get your spell book, and then you go in and that's essentially how you'll retrieve your own spell book back. And it's such a good puzzle. It wasn't that difficult, but it was so rewarding.
And
it's
one of
such
the
a great puzzle.
It was. I died a lot in that. I mean, I was enjoying it the whole time. I'm just like, you know, was it like frustrating at all?
Oh yeah, because the coal stuff and you can't breathe and
you
like
can't
just,
breathe.
Oh.
So one time, when I was we'll say the younger me, the first time through, I took a while to give myself, my older self, the spell book. And then, but I did. And then that person disappears, and I went through the little maze and came out. And when I came out the other side, I was almost out of air from the breathing
potion. But you will take a while to give yourself
the
spellbook.
And I took too long to give myself my spellbook, and I died. It was just like, you hand yourself the spellbook, and you run out of air, and you're dead. And so even though I had solved it all, I didn't do it fast enough the first time. So it was so good. And I just like laughed and laughed. It was just so...
Yeah, it was so well done. Like the fact that I wouldn't just like be okay with the mazes, that I actually would really enjoy them. And both of these puzzles, like the glass bat one is a full on maze puzzle. And this time travel one is kind of a maze thing too. And it's yourself in the future. And just, it's so smart and it's so funny and it's so well done. I adored it. It's I think my favorite puzzle that we've encountered so far. Like it was so rewarding to solve that future time self thing. Oh, it was amazing.
It was in this section of the game that I found two bugs, and I later looked at the Infocom bugs list, which I like to do, and found that these had never been reported before. So, of course, I sent them in to Nathan.
Excellent. What bugs did you find?
From the shaft bottom, you turn the dial to open the door.
Right, you turn the dial to whatever code you gave yourself.
Right, so there was two bugs related to that. So you turn the dial, you open the door, you go through the door, and at one point when I was thinking about it, like I was stuck and I was thinking about it, it's like, I bet there's something on the back of the door. So I closed the door, and then if you examine the door, it says set in the door is a large circular dial, which is, you know, is currently set to 1, 2, 3, and then I said turn dial, and it says you can't see any dial here. It was giving me the description of the door from the other side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I never noticed that. I never tried to look at the other side.
Yeah, because you're sane and, you know, make normal, good decisions.
well, also because I know there's like this time pressure because I can't breathe.
Right. And the other thing regarding the door is once unlocked, the door stays unlocked even if you then turn the dial to the wrong combination. So it wasn't a huge deal, but, you know, you set the dial to 645 and it unclicks, and then if you then change it, it doesn't lock you out again. So
right.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was a good puzzle, and as a bonus, I got to find bugs that hadn't been discovered before. So
it's all good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, it was good.
What else have I got here? When you go in the it took me a while to figure out the word dive, but when you dive in the lagoon and you go to the bottom and you open up the chest, and inside is like the Gru suit you're going to use, which is like, okay, now there's Gru suits.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a Gru suit, but there's also a useless brass lantern in there. That's the useless brass lantern that is, I think, the one that's lost in the classified ad in Popular Enchanting. Someone's got an ad saying they lost a useless brass lantern really deep in an area, and let them know if you find it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so I thought, I found the brass lantern.
Nice. Here's a puzzle that wasn't a puzzle. I spent a lot of time trying to get the flag off the flagpole. I tried to climb the flagpole. I tried to
fly. Oh, I suppose you just lower flag?
Lower flag is all you had to do, which I figured out eventually, but I felt dumb when I did it. It's like, oh, man. This.
And the fact that you examine the flag and out pops the vial is kind of silly. Like, it's weird that there's a thing hidden in a pocket in the flag in the first place. Yeah. That's a weird place to keep a thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to search it. I just like looked at the flag and out pops the potion. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Seemed kind of weird that it was like a hidden thing versus saying, and also why would there be a pocket in the flag? Anyway, some of the stuff was weird like that. And the amusement park was also weird. Like the death by slot machine was cool, but it's just a big area of like red herrings that doesn't make sense thematically.
Yeah.
I found that very
strange.
The whole amusement park area is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I kind of needed a little bit of cheat on was I was stuck and I just couldn't figure out how to progress in the game. And I had to look, and it said, oh, well, you'll find what you need in the hidden cave. And that's all I needed to know. It's like, oh, there's a hidden cave. And I would not have found a whole little area.
The one where you get rid of the water?
You have to get rid of the water, and then you go down to the cave, and then you find
a cool use of the spell, like the spell that causes liquids to become dry, so you like basically dry up a river.
Right, and then you go find the bat guano, which you can solve problems, a thing. Anyway, I felt that that was a little, I don't know, a little opaque. I would not have found that on my own.
I think I did because I was just using spells like on everything. Mm-hmm. I think I tried to fly across there first, but you don't find it. You've got to like dry up the river. But did you kill? And it turns out like, I guess it doesn't say this last line if you don't kill Belboz's plant. Did you dry up his plant?
I read that if you kill his plant, then the ending is slightly different. But
yeah, because I killed the plant and I forgot that I had because uh-huh. I just again use all the spells I can on everything, and you have a spell that dries or kills plants, and so I found a plant and I killed it. I killed all the plants. There's a plant I killed.
So what happens at the end if you kill his plant?
You get through like the whole normal, hey, I've won, blah, blah, blah. And here is it says basically, let me scroll to the very bottom of my last thing. Scores 400 puts you in the class of leader of Circle of Enchanters. So here ends the second chapter of the Enchanter Saga, by which, by virtue of your skills, you have been appointed as the next leader of the Circle of Enchanters. The final adventure awaits you as the Enchanter series concludes. You hear a distant bellow. What happened to my Morgia plant?
Nice. I got that exact same ending, except I didn't kill his plant because I'm a nice person, and I didn't get that last message. That's awesome.
I'm not a nice person. I'm feeling kind of guilty about some of the things I did in this game.
I want to talk about the three different endings. I don't think you
no,
saw
do,
them
you,
all.
No, do you mean three endings because there's the three doors you can open, or three endings?
Once you go through the white door, the correct door,
right?
There are
okay. So before we get there,
yeah.
Is there a way to know which door you should open?
No, I don't think so.
I was encountered three doors. I saved before it. Yeah. I opened them in order. So I opened like the black door.
Right.
You just immediately die. You open the silver door. You immediately die. Nothing you can do about it. You open the white door. Okay, that's the correct door.
Right.
I'm like, well, what the heck is this?
Yeah,
like, why do these other doors exist?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my gut would have been, and I tried them all because I do, but my gut would have been, okay, the white door was white is pure and good or whatever, and black is death, and silver, I don't know. No, I don't think there's any really
okay,
way
that,
to
that
know.
That did
door.
Seem like an unsatisfactory thing, in the same way the last battle was unsatisfactory. So in the right room, I died a couple times, but it wasn't really different endings. Like, I just woke up Belboz, mm-hmm. and which is the bad thing to do, because then Belboz is, of course, embodied by the demon GR or something. So GR is like, aha, sucker, and then just like takes you out, even if you have prepared yourself.
Right.
So I did that, but then I remembered. Oh no, I got to Vardic myself or whatever to like give myself the the brain guard, and then Swanzo to like get the GR out of Belboz. These words I'm using. I got a Swanzo to get the GR out of Belboz. And then you just win. Like, it's just, oh, okay,
right.
that was easy.
So, yes, you can win. The ways, interesting ways to lose, you can just go in there and kill your friend. What's his name? The necromancer?
Belboz.
You can kill Belboz, in which case the demon comes out of Belboz and takes over you. And that's a really good bad ending. It's just like he takes you over, and you spend the next 50,000 years tormenting the populace, and people hate you because the demon now looks like you, and that's how you get negative 99 points.
Okay, that's a good bad ending then, because that totally makes sense, because I knew I was in the final battle, so like even the first time I went through, I did the Vardic. Why you just got this Vardic spell, like, of course I'm going to be using it now,
right?
Because it specifically is to guard you, but it does make sense, because when I encountered when you do the right thing, a GR shows up and says, okay, I'm going to take you over now. Oh my goodness. How do you have a mind shield? Where did you get that from? And like, he attempts that and it fails, and that's how you win, because he's stuck without a body.
Right.
So that's a very logical bad ending, that he would take you over if you didn't Vardic yourself. So
and,
cool.
And the other ending, which was more sad, I think, is when you win the game, but it still ends up being sad, is when you mind shield yourself and then use the dagger to kill your friend, then the demon GR guy leaves that body, tries to get into your body and can't, and dies and dissipates, and yet, so you have saved everyone, and yet you've killed your friend.
And which you might think is the, if you, you could just stop there and go, oh, it's just a game with a sad ending.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So
though I'm willing to steal from gnomes. I didn't go and just murder my friend. I didn't even try that.
Well, there was a dagger, a jeweled dagger in the room. Of course I'm going to try.
But it doesn't mean I'm going to just stab someone. Well, Kansas Fest will be fun with you next time. I'm locking my door.
Don't leave any jeweled daggers around. That's all.
Apparently not.
Great game.
Great game. Yes. So I got, when I like how at the end you get a score and then you get a class. So I got classes like, I got class of charlatan, I got class of parlor magician, I got intermediate enchanter, I got a whole bunch of things. So yeah. There, it was fun when you would die to see like what your rating would be. But yes. I think the lowest rating I got was charlatan.
The lowest one I got was menace to society.
Right? I remember you tweeted because you're like minus 99 points, menace to society. I'm like, what the heck ending is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I did die, I think, once with either 20 points or 10 or something. I think that's how I got charlatan. Like, I did super early by sleeping in the guild hall. And it was like, I've done almost nothing and now I'm dead. Anyway, I dug it. I liked it very much.
Me too. Me too. And I look forward to trying a very different game next time, Plundered Hearts.
Yeah, with Plundered Hearts, yes. I'm looking forward to it too. And we will have a guest. Yes. A guest on the show, which will be very fun.
Yes. She's been on the show before, so she's old hat at our show. She played Fubitsky with us.
Does other podcasts that are better than this podcast. So she will once again lower herself to be on a podcast with us.
Right.
So this has been Eaten by a Grue, at the moment still a two-hander, the Infocom podcast. If you want to send feedback, you can do so by email. Hey, maybe I'll moderate it. You can send it to Grue, G-R-U-E, at monsterfeet.com, and Kevin, at least, will definitely get it.
That's true.
Speaking of him, you can hit him up on Twitter at Kevin Savitz, and I am at Carrington. And we will love you forever if you give us a nice review on iTunes to encourage other people to come join in the fun. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for being the MC Frontalotist and letting us use his tune as our theme song. We appreciate it.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
Oh, thank you. And I will see you next time for Plundered Hearts.
Bye.
Bye.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Grue.
Yay, it's been like a month.
It's been like a month. It's a month is a long time with no Kevin.
It's true. It's true. I get that a lot.
It's true. Excellent.